Godfathers in Podcasting, broadcasting live every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern. Now, in case y'all didn't know, they've been podcasting since before podcasting was even called podcasting. Archives of this show are available on every major podcast provider, and you can find video archives, merch, and more on their website, godfathersofpodcasting.com. Now, here are your hosts, two guys who have been broadcasting online since 1996, the Godfathers of Podcasting themselves, Donnie DeSilva and Chris Tidwell.
Hello, everyone. It is Thursday, November 30th. This is the 159th installment of this program. And like the lady said, I'm Donnie, and the man over there is my longtime partner. We go together like red beans and rice, biscuits and gravy, and rum and coke. That is Chris Tidwell, Notorious T.I.D. What's up, dude?
You were doing just fine, man. Like red beans and rice, I'm okay with. Biscuits and gravy, I mean, anybody who's anybody understands my love for biscuits and gravy, you know?
Right.
But the last one, dude.
Oh, you don't like rum and coke?
No.
No. What's your problem with rum and coke?
It's not tequila and beer.
I mean, I could have just said whiskey on ice, you know.
What kind of glass are you drinking out of there?
This is one of my fancy, I guess it's like a stemless margarita glass.
Yeah, that is not a proper whiskey glass.
No, it's not. It's not a proper whiskey glass. But I was looking quickly today, and I realized I didn't have anything readily available. So I just grabbed the stemless margarita.
I mean, there's no rules when you're by yourself drinking, right?
Gives a shit.
It would be different if you were out in public ordering that shit, because people might look at you a little sideways.
Yeah, but are you one of these weird snobs that thinks the shape of your glass is really going to fucking affect the taste of your drink?
Did you not hear me just a few seconds ago when I said it's not tequila and beer? So first of all, beer doesn't go in a glass. Beer goes in my mouth. And tequila just goes in an extra large shot glass, and you just sip on that like a fucking human.
Right.
That's all. So yeah, no, I don't. And first of all, okay, listen, I wasn't going to say anything because I noticed that you have ice in with your whiskey there.
I do have it on ice tonight. Usually I drink it straight, but tonight I'm drinking it on ice. What's wrong with you?
What is wrong with you?
I'm not allowed to enjoy my whiskey on ice.
I mean, just keep the whiskey bottle in the freezer then.
No.
Why put it on ice? I know where you live. And I guarantee you, you're using city water to make your ice.
No, I don't actually. I have one of those refrigerators that has the purified water gimmick built into it.
Oh, who's the snob now, huh?
The snob. How you like me now with my clean ice?
Wow. So it's been, you know what? We haven't been around for a minute. It's been a minute.
We've had a couple weeks off, and take a peek behind the curtain. I'll let y'all know. The last 2 weeks, Tid and I have been sitting here ready to go on the show and do the show for all of you. And literally at the 11th hour, we get a message from the scheduled guest of that week, who's not the guest coming on this week, but the scheduled guest, two different people in two consecutive weeks, that said, I'm so sorry, I can't make it. And it's like, oh, well,
okay.
And you know what, Tid? There was a time where, you know me, right? If someone had to cancel for whatever reason and it's 5 minutes to showtime, sure, I'm burning up my cell phone trying to see if we can get a last second replacement. And now it's like we're nearing the end of the year. We're officially in the holiday season. And I'm like, fuck it. Let's take the week off.
I mean, is this officially the holiday season?
I think so.
All right.
Have you not bought me anything yet for Christmas?
Same thing I got you last year, this time in blue.
Okay.
As in it blew its way out the window, and now I'm sorry not getting one this year.
Right. Exactly. I'm being told that this week's guest did not cancel and is in fact sitting backstage. So
there's still
maybe
time.
We should
we bring him on. Yeah.
Maybe we should cut to the chase and bring him in before he decides to walk on out. Ladies and gentlemen, it is time right now for the big hello. And this week's guest is making his first appearance on this program, and we are so excited to have him. He's a producer and a radio personality, but let's be honest, he's known the world over as one of the most decorated and influential DJs on the planet. From humble beginnings, spinning at high school dances in the greater Toronto area, to collaborating with names like John Legend, Kanye West, Usher, New Kids, Cardinal, Official, and Drake. He's also the personal DJ of another Toronto native, stand-up comic, and former guest on this show, Russell Peters. While many of his contemporaries focused on turntable tricks and all kinds of gimmicks, his priority was always simple: get people dancing, create a party. He's often credited with changing the way DJs work and, more to the point, perform. His fast-paced style opened the eyes of his peers and young aspiring DJs everywhere, showing a new, exciting way to do their damn job. He even has a long history with our former co-host on this show and our bro Danny O, as they both started gaining national attention at the same time in Electric Circus and Much Music's Rap City. Ladies and gentlemen, new sounds from his mind, he's gonna hatch, and every other DJ know they overmatch. He's playing chess while you're playing catch. This is the legend starting from scratch.
How long ago did you start writing that?
When did we start writing that?
Yeah.
like 7 minutes ago.
I feel like you should be standing right in front of my DJ setup every single time, right before I start. And we just throw to you, and then we get the party started.
I'm available for bookings.
There you go. There you go. What's up, guys?
We're doing well, man. How are you?
I'm good. Is my mic loud enough?
Yeah, man. You can turn it up a little bit.
There we go. Is that better?
100. I think so. Yeah. Thanks so much for hanging out with us, man. This all came about to let people know, because I love pulling behind the curtain so people get an idea of what's going on. I feel like at some point over the last 25, 30 years, you and I have crossed paths somewhere, in person. I couldn't figure out where or when, but we ran into each other, in September when, our mutual friend Joey Medina was performing at a comedy club and you were there, and Joey's like, "Hey, this is my boy, Donnie. This is Starting From Scratch." And I'm like, "Oh shit." And, you know, we started shit chatting, and of course, I'm a whore, so immediately I'm jumping into love to have you on the show sometime. And we finally managed to make it happen. And we really appreciate your time, dude, because I know you're busy traveling the world, doing your thing. So thanks for taking the time out.
It's all good. It's daddy first. That's why I was 6 minutes late.
Hey, no, we get that. We get that. Well, Tid doesn't get that, but he has like 12 dogs. So
there you go. Same. That's even worse.
Sometimes it's harder to get them to shut up when you got to do this stuff, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
You can't just tell them it's bedtime now.
No, a little bit of children's Dramamine, and like off they go into night land. You can't do that with the dogs. That's inhumane, Donnie.
Do you ever
we hear nothing.
That's right.
Now let me, if we're gonna stick to the stage name, what do we call you casually? Do we call you like Mr. Scratch?
Most people will either call me Scratch, or if they know me well enough, or if they pretend they know me well enough, they'll call me Mark.
Right. Well, that is how you introduced yourself to me. So, yeah. Listen, I'm curious, man, because when you stop and pause, or I don't know, do you take the time to do this yet, where you stop and pause and really reflect and go, Jesus, I really changed the game?
No. No is the answer. As you could tell, I'm a fidgeter. Even in my chair, I'm like constantly moving. And that's how my brain works. And
we all have ADHD.
Yeah, I think that's why we do what we do. But I haven't. I should at some point, but I feel like when I do that, it doesn't really suit my personality. I've never been that I did this and I did that. That being said, you know, I'm 51 now. I turned 50 last year. And when I turned 50, I was like, now what's, I was trying to figure out like, what's my legacy? Like, what are people going to remember the most about me? You know, I guess as you get older and a lot of your friends start to pass away and all this stuff, it's natural that kind of stuff gets into your head, right? So
sure.
I've really lately been in that, you know, what is my legacy? How will I be remembered? What will I be remembered for kind of state right now? So I probably will start doing that. probably privately, maybe publicly, who knows? I've never been that person, but I do. I mean, it does cross my mind when I hear other DJs and I know where that came from and I know where this came from and I know why you're playing this and how come you're allowed to play this kind of stuff now in certain clubs in front of certain crowds. So it definitely does cross through my mind. Yes, absolutely.
I mean, hold on. What do you mean? Like play certain things in certain clubs?
I mean, you got to understand I'm talking, you know, when I started like 89, 90 time. Right. So, because I grew up with no, when I say grew up in the DJ world, because I grew up in the DJ world, kind of self-trained and never really, I always listened to everything musically. So when I started playing, and back then I was playing like predominantly black parties. Okay. And by predominantly, I mean 95% of the crowd. I would be playing everything. And I've always done that. I would be playing, you know, like the Phil Collins and all this other stuff, but I would be mixing it in with everything else. And, you know, our generation who in my age group, like we grew up, most people grew up listening to everything because all we had was radio. And that's on the radio, you heard everything, whether you liked it or not. Like a lot of that 80s, the 70s, 80s stuff is just naturally instilled in your brain. Like you'll hear a song and start singing like, how the hell do I know the words to this song? It's just there. You know what I mean? So I never understood why I can't play an Eagles song and then play, you know, whatever it was I was playing back then or that. And that's how I also started. When I first started, I was mixing has always been my biggest thing. So I would always enter DJ competitions and stuff and everybody else would be scratching like crazy. And I would do a bit of that. But what I always noticed got people to turn their heads and be like, who is this guy? It was the mixing. I would just mix the craziest records together that had no business being mixed together. And then when I saw that, when I saw the reaction from those kind of crowds, I'd be like, okay, well, then I must be able to do this everywhere I go. And that's kind of what I've always done since.
It's funny because that hallmark that really, really puts you on the map, right? Your ability to mix and mash up things that nobody would have ever predicted going together. That's now one of the most popular things on social media. Like you go searching on TikTok or whatever, there's these guys with millions and millions and millions of likes. And all they're doing is basically taking the vocal from one thing and putting it on top of the instrumental of something completely different. And people are all like, I want to buy this.
I know.
They're all going mental. And
I know
really what you were doing 25 years ago.
Absolutely. And I mean, there was a lot of people even longer than that. There was a lot of people, like even when AM, you know, AM became really good for really big for like the mashup scene and stuff. But when I say we, there was a ton of DJs across the world doing that stuff way before. Right. And I mean, it is what it is. I kind of cringe every time I see people doing these mixes on stuff. I mean, some of them sound really good. But it is what it is. I mean, we do this on the fly. We do it in the party right there. Sometimes it works. Sometimes it doesn't. It is what it is. I mean, if people are doing it and it sounds good and do it and they do it because it pushes the songs further, it gives songs new life, I'm all for it. I mean, a lot of the biggest problem I find is that a lot of people that are doing these remixes now don't understand music. So it sounds off. Right. You know what I mean? Like to someone that's not, you know, deep into music or whatever, they'll just let it go and whatever. And it's cool. But to me, I'm like, no, that's the wrong key. And that's I'm a perfectionist like that. So that's my biggest thing is it's such an open season now, but it's open season on everything. It's open season on podcasting. It's open season on everything. No matter what you do, it's open season. Everybody can do what they want to do in the snap of a finger. So, I mean, again, I'm all for it. I'm a DJ by nature. I love hearing mixes. I love hearing really, really creative mixes. I'm all for it all day. If you're creative, cool. If you're like, this is A and this is B, I'm like, okay, next. But some people out there have some really, really amazingly creative minds, and I love it.
When I was a kid in high school, one of my very best friends was a guy who, I don't know if you know him or not, but he's been around the DJ scene forever. DJ Iron Mike.
Yeah, of course.
I used to play house with Mike.
Yeah.
What's that?
We used to play hockey together.
Oh, no way. That's so funny.
Shepard, all those guys. Yeah.
That's right. With Shep and all those guys. So yeah. Iron Mike was one of my absolute best friends in high school. I was there when he bought his first piece of vinyl. Yeah. You know, we used to go down every Saturday down to play the record, and he'd throw the door open. Eugene, what you got for me? And he'd buy every house music 12 inch that he could find. He'd go back home and we would sit in his basement. He had this unfinished basement in his dad's house that he converted with a couple of strobe lights he found. He had his turntables and his amps there. And for whatever reason, he put up a big banner that he made from scratch that said Club Joe. I don't know why Mike had a place called Club Joe, but that's what it was. And the boys would all come over. It'd be like 5-6 dudes. And he would just spin house music for the next 8 to 10 hours because he was obsessed with his craft. He was obsessed. Like, they talk about putting in your 10,000 hours. I think this guy did that by grade 12 because he was just a maniac. And I'm wondering, was that your teenage years? Was that very similar?
Absolutely. I started in probably the last year of high school. I started is when that was my infancy years. And yeah, absolutely. From the first time I did it, I would literally come home and with the, you know, little stack of records that I had, I would borrow records from different people and borrow equipment. I didn't have equipment back then. And I would literally play music from about 4:30 till about 10:30 every single night in my room. And I used to do that. I mean, my mom tells me I used to do that when we used to go to my aunt's house. I would just stay at the record players and I would just sit there with headphones on and just put music on and just listen to music. So, and I mean, I did that playing music every day for hours forever and ever and ever. I've never reached a point where like, I don't have to practice. I don't call it practice. I never did. Mm-hmm. To me, it was just, I'm just constantly learning.
Mm. Do you still feel like you have more to learn when it comes to DJing, or is it now all about evolving technologies and evolving techniques more so than your own skill set?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's always stuff to learn. It's never because of the technology, you know, right? What I mean? But even on the basic end of things, like with scratching and all that stuff has evolved so much. And I never really, even though it's in my name, I never really... That was never really a forefront thing for me. I was like, I was good enough to get by and do what I had to do. But now, like, these guys are like ridiculous animals, like machines. And I mean, I wish I could, but again, I don't need to for what I do. You know what I mean? Like, people aren't coming to me, my parties, for that kind of stuff. They want to hear music and fun. And so I'm all about that. But yeah, I mean, and especially now with technology and someone with a brain like mine for mixing and to be able to do so many things that, you know, that would take me a lot longer to do on vinyl. Now it's just everything snap, 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 snap. So I love where we are right now. And I also love not having to carry record crates anymore. That's a beautiful thing. But yeah,
that part of the job sucked.
Yeah.
But don't you miss that? Don't you miss that sound? Like, you know, have we gotten to that point yet? Because that vinyl sound, there was always just something. And I hear this. You always hear this from a lot of DJs and a lot of people that, you know, play music and stuff, that vinyl sound was just something. There's something unique about it, right? Have we reached the point where that is coming up digitally yet or what?
I mean, with some stuff. I mean, you're never going to match it with, if you take like a 70s roller skating record or an early 80s hip hop record. Like, I don't think that feeling of will ever be made on digital the same. It's just, yeah, it is a different feeling. I think when DJs say that, yes, there's a different sound, but I also think it's just a different feeling. That's nostalgic for us, right? So on a sound level, yeah, I mean, if you're listening to Beastie Boys and it's, you know, License to Ill, but it's a digital version. It's never going to sound the same as it did back then.
Right. You can't compare vinyl to a piece of digital compressed audio. If you're a true audiophile, you're going to hear the difference. Now, if you're the majority of the general public, fuck it. They don't care.
But I mean, and by the flip side of it, with, you know, if they take a License to Ill or something from back then and remaster it and, sure, and give it new life, like I'm all for that too. Like, why not? You get to hear things in the songs you never got to hear before because it was on vinyl. You know what I mean? With technology, they can do so much stuff now. So, I have all my vinyl still, but I'm not that vinyl guy anymore, to be honest with you. I get asked to do vinyl parties. I'm like, the amount of time it would take me to go through the stuff and pick out and try and narrow down to be able to just bring a couple crates. Like, I don't know if I could do that.
You talked earlier about, you know, when we were all kids, you listened to a little bit of everything because your source for music was pretty much the radio. And, you know, I don't know about you, man, but like, well, no, I do know, 'cause I know where you grew up. But when I was a kid growing up in the Greater Toronto Area, there was no hip hop station. There was, nothing like that.
You had the college radio stations for that.
You had college radio stations, but when I was a kid, I wasn't even aware of that scene. You had the rock stations, you had top 40 shit, you know, and you pretty much just turned it on and listened to the whole thing. And also, like, because our media wasn't digital, if it was a record or a cassette tape, you put that bitch in and you're listening to every single track from start to finish. I feel like now, with the proliferation of choice, people are so narrow in the band of music that they like. Like, these days, it's not even like I like hip hop. It's like a specific subgenre of hip hop, you know? And like, it's so mind blowing to me that there doesn't seem to be this crossover anymore. And I feel like as a result, music has become really, really predictable. Like, you're not hearing the variants like you used to hear anymore. You know, when you listen to artists that were coming up in the 80s and 90s, you know, hip hop artists, heavy metal artists, whoever, like, yeah, I was influenced by the Beatles, or I love the Rolling Stones, right? And it's like, really? But then when you really pay attention, you go, oh yeah, there's something else to their music. Like, do you think that the scene in general suffers by the overabundance of narrow choice?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I feel for the artists, because it is crazy at the speed they have to release music as.
Yeah.
It is insane. Like, you'll literally, if you go on Sirius and listen to whatever Hitch channel there is, you'll be like, and today is the brand new Dua Lipa, and then next week, and here's another brand new Dua. And you're like, how are these people? And it's because people just hear the song, skim past it, next. Okay, what do you got? I need more. Give me more. And the artists are just like, here, take more, take more, take more. So the music, the quality of the music just goes down and down, because it's impossible to keep making top quality music and just be pumping it out at that rate. It is impossible. It's impossible for anybody to do that, period. No matter what you're doing, for the producers, for the artists, you can't just keep pumping out top-notch stuff at a rate like that. It's impossible. So I think that it's not, I don't even think it's, maybe it's a combination of the narrow-mindedness of the newer generation when it comes to their music, but it's just, I think the artists are feeling the pressure and pumping out the stuff so fast too. So they're playing into their hand. Well, if the artist, you know, if the top tier artist held back a bit and be like, okay, we're going to give you, the only person I've seen do this is Classified, by the way, who started like a couple months ago and said, I'm going to give you a new song every 6 weeks, or it was something like that. Or every couple months, I'm going to give you a new song, instead of here's one every Monday. And then they see artists like, I'm going to release 30 songs in next month and one per day. And I'm like, how? And then what? And then what do you do after that month? Then all your stuff is out there, 30 songs. And the next month comes and people are like, next, we don't even care about that artist anymore. Yeah.
You put out 30 songs, and then after that, they're like, oh, he fell off.
And now there's nothing this month. You know what I mean? So it's crazy. Like I truly feel for the artist to have that pressure of trying to sustain the level that you're at. And you can only do that by force feeding so much product to these guys. And it's crazy. It's like,
so is there a breaking point? Is there something that can actually change that trend? Is there a way that we can pull back a little bit and put the rabbit back in the hat?
No, because I mean, if 10 of the artists do it, the other 9,000 of them are just going to be like, well, then here, they're going to sleep for a second. I'm going to give you this much and bang, bang. So, and because of the way, I think the way people take in music is totally different than like you just explained with the cassette and how we used to just listen. Even back then, if you were on the radio, listening to the radio, you had maybe two or three stations you'd flip between. Now you can endlessly flip between stations and listen to podcasts or listen to this or listen to that person's DJ mix or listen. We never had those opportunities before. So we had to take in the full song. The songs back then were, you know, minimum four minutes, 4.5 minutes. Now, 90 seconds. 2 minutes is like a heavy song. You know what I mean? And it's crazy. It's crazy to be driving and listening to Sirius or whatever people listen to, the Spotify's or whatever, and hear how quick these songs just fly by. They're literally like 90 seconds. They say five things in the song, next song, and it's the same thing. And it's just like, what is happening right now? But there are.
Imagine a young artist today trying to put out a Stairway to Heaven.
I mean, there are people doing amazing things out there. And there are, and especially with the R&B world, like there's some incredible artists and they are doing it the proper way. And they do get popular. So, I mean, there is hope, but I don't think that will ever take over as much as, I mean, I don't know what the next phase is going to be. I'm afraid for the next phase, to be honest with you. I think it's just everybody's, because it's so, the higher we get with technology, the attention span gets smaller and smaller and smaller. People want things faster and faster and faster. Amazon, you get your package the next day. No, I want it today. But whereas before, how long do we have to wait to get something? You know what I mean? Yes. It's like everything, they just want everything faster, faster, faster. So people are just going to keep pumping it out and there's zero sustainability anymore. There's not going to be, you know, who's going to be the biggie or who's going to be the whoever was, you know, how many Dancing Queen songs are we going to have that were made 45 years ago? And still to this day, when you play them, A, they feel good, they sound good, and people still move to it. How many songs are going to be like that in 30 years, in 10 years, in 5 years? It's crazy that thought, that to think that someone could sit there and give their life into making a song and an album, and within a month it's gone and no one cares. That's crazy to me.
Do you find that, like, when you're doing your parties, that attention span is also shortened now compared to maybe where it was, you know, 20 years ago? I mean, you kind of have the luxury of like, nah, I'm going to play out this whole song. You know what I mean? Where they can't fast forward the DJ. You know what I mean? Or
I was never a whole song guy though. But but I think
I was going to say
the difference now is I'm at the stage of my career where I'm only doing the parties that I really want to do. So I don't do, I don't do like the big room parties, and I don't do those parties where I have to do what they want kind of thing. And I'm older, so my crowd is older, and the people that come to see me generally kind of know who I am, what I do. So I don't get the TikTokers to my party, and I want this 30 seconds of this particular song sped up, slowed down. Like, I, to me, it blows my mind how people listen to the music. And I hear it from other DJs that I know that play university parties and play college parties. And he's like, I literally have to play, you know, this part of the song for 20 seconds because that's all they know from TikTok. And I was like, that's crazy. I would just pack up my shit and go, because I can't do that personally. I applaud anyone else that does. But as a party consumer, how many songs are you going to listen to for 20 seconds to last, you know, 10 o'clock till whenever these guys are playing music till? Like, it's crazy.
Yeah. Could you imagine trying that as a cover band? Just learn 20 seconds of each little thing and like go out there and put together a set.
I'm sure somebody's probably doing that.
Yeah, probably.
If not, you better trademark that shit.
We just need talent. when we were talking earlier about, you know, influences and you know, today's musicians not having the varied spectrum. I know that you grew up in a household where your mom was a big Motown lover. Your dad was a Beatles fanatic. Do you think having that varied musical influence right from childhood really affected the way that you saw beats and the way that you see music?
Absolutely. 100%. I mean, I never, and I still don't, I mean, I've said this so many times, but I don't separate music. Like, I don't say this is, like, the first time I heard Backbone Slide, I never thought that was hip hop. I didn't even know what the hell hip hop was, to be honest with you. I was just like, this is dope. This song is crazy. It's nothing like I heard before. And then when I found out, okay, this is hip hop stuff. Cause even before that, like, I knew who Public Enemy was and all this stuff, but it was never hip hop to me. It was just music. And then I was like, okay, well, if this is hip hop, now I need to learn more hip hop. Okay. So this is reggae. So what is reggae? Okay. This is reggae. Okay. Now I need to go learn reggae. And that's literally what I was doing for the first, you know, 3-4 years of DJing. I would learn what is this? Okay. I didn't even know what genres were back then. Cause even in high school, I hung out with everybody from the skinheads to the hip hop crew, to the reggae guys, to the polo wearing, you know, new wavers. So I hung out with everybody because I loved all that music too. I loved Depeche Mode to this day, you know, New Order. That was my stuff.
But same. By
the
same
token, back then I was listening to Special Ed and Public Enemy and all that stuff. And then I was introduced to reggae music when I moved up here. So it was like, and I love my house music. I've always loved my house music. So I'm a sponge with music. I went through a thrash metal stage. You know, I was used to listen to like Anthrax and Slayer and Iron Maiden and all that stuff. And Motley Crue. I love Motley Crue. So I love all this music. And I still to this day, if I hear something, I don't really care what it is. You know what I mean? I never listened to country before, but if I hear stuff now, country's so popular now, I hear it. I was like, this is great.
Yeah.
I just
you
never. Know
what? You mentioned Depeche Mode. I've said this to people before and they look at me sideways. Depeche Mode was the first concert I ever went to that wasn't just about the music. They had these giant video walls set up on either side of the stage, and it was like watching a music video for 2 hours.
Was that at the exhibition? Is that the one?
No, that was at Kingswood at Canada's Wonderland. Gotcha. RIP to Kingswood. But
they had great shows there.
They had some great shows, man. I remember that same weekend I saw, because this is when I was a teenager and I had nothing to do but use up my season pass, right? And go with my boys. So I think it was on a Saturday, we saw Depeche Mode. On the Sunday, we saw the Steve Miller Band.
Crazy.
And like, you know, the Steve Miller Band was just something that my friends were into, listening to the Joker when they're fucking getting high. But Depeche Mode, it was like these two giant video walls and just crazy psychedelic effects and all this shit. Like, it was immersive. Now you're hard pressed to find a concert today that isn't like that, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
But that didn't exist back then. And really helped change the game in terms of live presentation of music.
The heavy metal guys really were the ultimate with stage shows. The Black Sabbaths, the best concert I ever saw, like visually, was Ronnie James Dio.
Yeah.
His stage shows were, I mean, Iron Maiden with Eddie, and like, I think
Alice Cooper with the giant puppets
guys,
and
all those guys, like Motley Crue, all those guys, Van Halen. Yeah. Their stage shows were, you could not touch their stage shows back then, especially like in the 70s and 80s when it came to rock and metal. Those guys were next level, so far ahead of everybody else. Not sure why it was only them, but they were so far ahead of everybody else.
Yeah, it seemed like a lot of other genres. Like, if you know, like the hip hop scene at the time, like you think about breakdance culture, right? It's a boombox and a sheet of cardboard. Like, it's minimalist to the extreme, right? And then you have Alice Cooper on stage with a guillotine chopping his own head off, you know? Yep. And you have Depeche Mode with these 100-foot high video walls, putting up, you know, stuff that makes you feel like you're stoned out of your skull. It's a different world, man. And it's crazy to me that a lot of people don't understand where this stuff originated. They don't understand the roots of it. I mentioned in the intro, you know, we have a mutual friend. I don't know if he's a friend of yours or an acquaintance or what, but he's been a friend of Tids and I for, you know, 2.5 decades. And he used to be a co-host on this show, Danio. You know, Dan has been teaching for the last decade or more. He's been teaching his hip hop school, right? Where he goes in and works with young kids. And now he's even teaching classes to young adults. And he focuses on the history of the genre, which I think is really cool, because how do you appreciate what you're listening to if you don't understand the roots of it? And I feel like there's not enough of that goes on.
Because there's not enough people that care. I mean, realistically, yeah. Anybody that wants to find out, just go on YouTube. There's something there for everything. Any band, any artist, any genre, something exists on YouTube. If you care that much about it, you can go find out. But I love Danny. I mean, he's one of the most talented people I've ever worked with it throughout my career. And he absolutely, he's always been a guy, even from back then. He appreciates and respects the craft and the art form so much, which is the way I approach DJing. But, and I've seen it with him, and there's a few guys that I know that are such passionate people when it comes to, you know, rapping and writing and really analyzing what these people do and stage performance and stuff. And he's always been top notch with stuff. And we did literally start out together at the same time. He looks exactly the same.
Don't tell him that. His ego is big enough.
Yeah, that's all. I'm wearing the blue jacket.
He still tells his agent, you know, I can get cast for anything between 18 and 25.
Yeah. And he could. But yeah, he's been, I mean, he's done so much for Canadian hip hop too. I don't think he gets enough credit, but he's done a lot for Canadian hip hop.
I agree. I messaged him this morning and I said, hey, listen, Starting From Scratch is going to be on the podcast tonight. You have any interactions or funny stories that you can give me that I can throw out there? And he goes, not really, bro, but here, check this out. And he sends me a video from YouTube, which is him rapping live on Rap City, and you're there with a bunch of other dudes and you're sitting on top of a car drumming out a beat, banging on someone's hood, just putting dents in someone's car. You remember that?
Absolutely.
It's so funny.
We go way, that was like, you're talking like 91 at that point or something like that. We go way, way back.
Unreal.
That was straight out of high school. Yeah.
I've heard you say in another interview that you did, actually an interview that was done by another former guest on this show, Rochester. I heard you say in that interview, because they asked you, you know, how did you really establish yourself south of the border? How did you establish yourself internationally? And your answer I thought was fascinating. You're like, I really didn't. I did it from home, and people came to me in Toronto. They saw me spinning, they saw me playing, and they dug it. And that's how my name got built up internationally. And I thought, man, that is counterintuitive to what everyone else seems to think you have to do, which is tour. And it kind of reminded me, not a perfect comparison, but it reminded me of the 90s grunge scene in Seattle, right? Where you had all these amazing bands that were just playing these little clubs in Seattle, yet everyone knew about them before they blew up because that scene was so fucking hot. Talk to me about that time in your life when you're playing clubs in Toronto, you're doing what you want to do, and now you're gaining this notoriety outside of Canada and people are traveling to come see you play. What was that like?
Well, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say they're traveling to come see me play, but I was I was a bonus feature on their trip. But you know what it was? I was literally, you know, at those times, I'm living in my mom's basement. You know what I mean? I have no day job. I'm playing literally like seven nights a week. And I've never been, there's two main reasons that I never was that 300 days a year touring guy. A is because I built up such a strong thing in Toronto, and Toronto was the toughest place to play. Like Toronto was really a tough, like if you impressed Toronto crowds back then, you made it. That was really like a stepping stone. Like, yeah, I did it. And the fact that I was, you know, really doing it here, I was like, well, I don't want to go anywhere else. I mean, it was partly my ignorance, but I was like, I don't feel the need to go anywhere else. I'm doing what I want to do here, and I'm playing for crowds that understand the music. You know, I had gone to play like the Buffaloes and that kind of stuff, and just watching the crowds, like especially in the US, a lot, I mean, I don't know how it is today, but hopefully not the same. But back then it was very, you know, the US DJs would play the same song like 8 times in the night if it was a big song. You know what I mean? And the crowds would literally, they would play the song, the crowds would go on the dance floor. Transition to the next song, they're off the dance floor. And I was like, what the fuck is going on? How does this happen? And I was like, I don't want to be part of this. I have zero interest in being a part of this. I don't care how big the club is or how big this DJ is. I was like, you come to Toronto and try that shit. They'll throw shit at you in a heartbeat. You know what I mean? Like, and I've seen it. So I was like, I didn't want. So it was like that thing of, I wasn't a super fan of traveling that much. And I had built such a strong thing here. And I was like, I'm good. I'm making a shit ton of money here, playing all these nights a week, and I'm doing exactly what I want to do, and I'm happy doing it. So yeah, I mean, in the 90s, if you were coming down to Toronto, yeah, hell yeah. 9 times out of 10, if you're into urban music or whatever at that time, of course people would come see me. Absolutely. And all the promoters wanted to book me. You know what I mean? So it didn't really matter at that time. You had your big dogs in kind of every genre. You know what I mean? And at that time we were killing it. Like, no matter what we did, everywhere we went, we were shutting places down. And this is in a time when, you know, the crowds were coming out from 9 o'clock. It was no 1 o'clock in the morning thing. This was right. Like, by 9 o'clock, there's like 1,000 people waiting to get in this club. At 9:30, it opens, and straight, it's packed all night long. And you got to do this, you know, all night long without repeating a song. Cause in those times, when I say Toronto was tough, like if you play a song that somebody else played, or like they're literally booing you, they're throwing shit at you. Like, it was unacceptable here. So I was so appreciative of that. And I was like, if I can, you know, maintain at this high level here to this crowd that won't take any shit from anybody else, I don't want to go anywhere else. Absolutely don't want to go anywhere else. I want people to come here and feel the wrath. Like, I want you. You're big in New York. Come play with me out here. You know what I mean? I want you to come up to Toronto. Let's play a party together and let's see what happens. So those were my highs. I was like, and it wasn't necessarily that I was cocky or like, yeah, I can do it. It was never even a matter of that. Inside, yes, I was. Inside, I was like, yeah, I can, give me any party, house, reggae, anything. I got this. You know what I mean? But I just loved having those moments where it was like, it was like a my house kind of thing. You know what I mean? Like, I still to this day, I love Toronto. I love playing Toronto the most out of anywhere I've been in the world. And I'll say that till the day I stop DJing. Cause even now, to be able to do these parties that I do now, when I'm in my phase of only things I want to do are my own kind of events. I do all kinds of music events, and I get the people that really want to hear that type of stuff. I don't get a lot of people that are just coming because, oh, I heard this party's happening, or like, I'm so happy that I'm in that mode and I'm in that phase now where people have grown up with me. So they, you know, they trust me. If you grew up with me for 30 years while I'm DJing, then you have that trust for me that if I'm doing, you know, whatever, a yacht rock party, you know, it's going to be a fun yacht rock party. If I'm doing a reggae party, you know, you're going to hear stuff that you want to hear. So, all that stuff. I was just, even now, like if I get offers to go play other places, I just kind of really sit back and think about it. Like, is this something I really want to do? I've never been a Vegas-y kind of guy. It's never been my thing. I don't like,
sorry, Ted.
Yeah, for me, I don't like, though, I've never really been like a big room. I don't mind. I'll do a Rebel every now and then if they ever ask me. But for me, it's like I do it once and I'm good for a good while. I could never live in that world. It's just not, there's not enough musical appreciation in that world for me to survive. I cannot survive with crowds that do not appreciate music. I just can't. I feel like I don't have fun. I feel like I'm selling my soul. You know, when I first started, I would do tons of stuff just for the money, you know, do this gig just for the money. And of course, DJs out there, they have to do that. There's people that, and there's also DJs that just love playing that way. And that's great. You know, that's the beauty of DJing. And that's the beauty of so many different venues and so many different DJs and so much different music. You can go to this day and hear brand new indie rock music and a DJ will play that all night long. And that's incredible. You know, I think that's incredible. Do I know any of the songs? Absolutely not. You know what I mean? But I think the beauty of it is that you can find a place to go with any type of music that you like and hear somebody who specializes in that stuff or has the same appreciation for it as you do and have a great night together. I think that's incredible.
Do you feel like there is a segment, because you talked about, you know, people that don't really appreciate music, but do you have a segment of fans or followers that aren't necessarily DJ in part of DJ culture? They don't understand that world, but they just love you because they love Russell Peters.
I'm sure there probably is,
but you're not necessarily aware of those people.
No, I mean, I don't think those people would come to my specialty music kind of parties. Yeah, they would come to like the bigger stuff, or they'll come to the Russell shows and so forth. But yeah, all the time. I mean, and keep in mind, like, I know Russell through DJing. So we used to DJ together back, you know, way back when. So we do have a lot of and we're both from here. So we do have a lot of the same friends. And of course, when people come backstage, especially when we're in Canada, it'll always be like, we get the love together because, you know, they've grown up with me musically, whether it's in the clubs or on the radio or through however they found out about me, and with Russell with the comedy, and he, you know, always has me there with him. So even if they don't know my history per se and they only know me through Russell, it's still a beautiful thing to me. I mean, if they can still appreciate what I'm doing at the shows before Russell comes on stage, that's fine with me. That's just another branch of the tree. It's a different way I DJ. I DJ totally different when I play for Russell than you would come hear me in a club, or you hear me on the radio. Like, they're all different ways of DJing.
Right. Sorry, Ted, I interrupted you before.
I was just baffled because you used the term yacht rock, and I wanted to know how many yacht rock parties do you play?
And, not enough.
and this is what I say, because I just turned 54, so we're all, you know, except for Donnie's the youngest one here, obviously, right? but I can remember when I was of that, you know, your musical roots, that 13 to 18, where you're really starting to figure it out what you like, right? And my shit was not, you know, what is considered yacht rock stuff. But now, listen, I'll tell you straight up, I will on Sundays, along with all of the other stuff, you know, my Bill Withers stuff when I'm cleaning the house, or, you know, some Otis Redding or something like that. But you damn right, if I'm like, hey, Google, play some Hall & Oates, or literally throw on the what is yacht rock on Sirius XM. And it's amazing how it's like, as much as I shit on all of these songs, you know what I mean, when I was a kid growing up, because I'm not listening to that. That's, you know what I mean? I knew all of the songs, apparently, but yeah, I wasn't listening to it, right? But now that you get older, you have a whole new appreciation for all of that music. What I'm curious to know, though, what was like the, you said earlier, you know, a lot of the stuff you do in the DJing, like on the fly at the parties, right? Was there that moment you were like, you had it in your head where like, oh, I'm going to mix this shit together, and it just stopped the room dead?
Probably. there's no instance where I could say yes, it did, but I'm sure it probably did. I'm sure it probably did. And I think that added to everything. I really think that those kind of moments add to it. I think stopping a room is probably a good, depending on how you follow it up. I think stopping a room is probably an incredible thing to do as a DJ, because it just makes people turn, look at you, and then, okay, now what?
Right.
Now, if you, now the beauty of being a professional DJ or something is, I call it the pillow effect, is where if that happens, okay, cool. Now what? So how do you bring their interest back, pique their interest? And that, that exact moment you're talking about is how I really, that is why I really focused on mixing. Because even if I stop a room, even if I play a song that maybe they're not used to hearing in a club setting, which I've done billions of times, that's when you throw in beats underneath and they'll be like, oh, okay. Oh shit. Okay. I get it. You know what I mean? Now I get it. Okay. I get why it happened. Okay. Let's get back into the party kind of thing. Right. So, yeah, I'm sure it absolutely has. And even if it happened to me now, I wouldn't panic. I would just be like, 1 second.
Do you have a go-to? Do you have a go-to? Or it's like, oh, this one's going to, like, this will get them every single time?
No, I mean, I think there's millions of songs that can do that. But I just think for me, the more impressive thing as a go-to, even if I'm in front, if I'm the one playing the music or if I'm in the crowd listening to music, I'm more impressed with how you can manipulate something for me. So even like anybody could just play music and I can, we can all just go out and we kind of know 30 songs that going to make people bob their heads and move no matter what age group, no matter what genre, we kind of know that, but how you can put these songs together and how you can flip it up for me. You know what I mean? We've been hearing these songs, you know, I've heard Fleetwood Mac Dreams probably, you know, 5,000 times in my life. So if I go out and hear it, yes, it's still a beautiful song. Yes, I still love hearing it in its natural form. But if I hear someone flip it, I'll be like, God damn. You know what I mean? And like, how the hell did you do that? Okay, I love this. You know what I mean? So, and to see DJs do that live as opposed to just playing remixes is ultra impressive for me. You know what I mean? So, and one more thing, I just want to go back, Chris, to what you said about the Yacht Rock. I think a big difference with why you like Yacht Rock now is because if you even realize it, like a lot of that, you mentioned Bill Withers and Otis Redding and stuff, and a lot of that Yacht Rock is super soulful and super funky. But I think back then it was so, you know, for lack of a better term, whitewashed. And it was so radio. It was radio music back then. And it was very AM music. And you know, I don't listen to AM music. But now when you sit back and you listen to Ambrosia or you listen to it, even the Eagles, like there's a lot of funk and soul in there.
And Doobie Brothers growing up for me and my household, Doobie Brothers was, it was all about that. It was all about Kenny Loggins. It was all, but then at the other side, my mom would throw on like Janis Joplin and you know what I mean? The Grateful Dead and stuff like that. So like there was always this wide, wide variety, but yeah, it was, you know, very much, you can see the influence, but
The older you get and the more you start to understand, because when you're young, you don't really understand music. You listen to music, but you don't really understand music.
Yeah, so I don't get it. I'm still young.
The older you get, you start to really understand and appreciate the music more. And you can be like, okay, now I kind of see how all these things intertwine. And a lot of these bands share the same session players and they share the same drummers and they share the same bassist and whether it's rock or whether it's, you know, and all these groups and Steely Dan, who's like my ultimate group, the Beatles first and Steely Dan second, but you know, Steely Dan, one song would be, you know, raging guitars rock off the fly and the next song would be like super funky soul, so you'd be like, and this is the same group, you know what I mean? So I think the older you get, you really start to appreciate and you could see how all these kind of genres can go together. And even now, like a lot of the new artists, especially with the R&B, you can really hear that older influence in it. And I think it's great to hear that older influence mixed with, you know, put that new zest on it and give it new flavor and put it out there and let this new generation figure out where that song came from. And, you know, that was always fun for me too, is like, I would hear whoever it was that sampled whatever song it was. Like, I don't even know how much I knew of, you know, or let's say I'm going to probably shoot myself in the foot, but let's say when Big Papa came out, you know what I mean? How many people really knew Between the Sheets was the Isley Brothers thing. So, and that still happens to me to this day. I'll hear some music and then somebody will be like, did you know it came from this? And I'll be like, absolutely not. You know what I mean? I think that is what keeps that passion and that love for music for me going all the time. Cause you can, you know, I was just on, I'm not like an avid Spotifyer, but I was on Spotify today, just looking through people's lists just to get caught up with stuff. And I'm like, there's so much music out there. I don't even know where to start. But then you listen to a lot of these songs and you can hear they're just regurgitating, you know, songs. Now it's that they're so bold. It's like songs from 4 or 5 years ago.
It's not even old shit.
They're not even reaching back. It's just like this Ja Rule did this 5 years ago, 6 years ago. I'm going to do it again. You know what I mean? So, and the people love it because they weren't even familiar with that 5, 6 years ago, which is crazy. But again, if these kids are, you know, if these kids are 13, 14, 15, they were,
it's all new
back then. Yeah, they were super young back then. So you just hope that this new generation will fall down that rabbit hole like we all have and be like, okay, so he sampled this and this is where it came from. And oh, this is crazy. Now I can listen to this music. Like I've cussed so many people in my ears of just how can you listen to one genre of music only? It drives me crazy. I don't understand it. I get that you may not like another genre of music. Like, you know, if someone was playing like country twang to me back in the days, I'd have been like, eh, I'm not old enough for that yet. And I understand that because you do have to appreciate different genres at a different times in life, I think. You know what I mean? And I just can't understand. People are like, oh, I don't listen to house music. And I'm like, how can you, what? I don't get it. Like, have you heard this song? Oh, that song's cool. Okay, so then don't say you don't like house music or don't say you don't like hip hop because you hear a certain song or a certain, you know, era of hip hop that you don't like. There's beautiful stuff in every single genre somewhere. You just have to have the patience to find it. And I think most people just don't have the patience to find it.
I love that. I absolutely love that. Earlier, Tid mentioned his love for Hall & Oates, and I thought that was a nice transition because before we let you go, I do want to talk very rapid fire about some of the things that are going on in the news right now and get your take on them. Scratch.
I just read the Hall & Oates thing. It really
broke the Hall & Oates story, man. They're suing each other. Like it's crazy. So you know what? Before we do that, Tid, let's throw in the little bit of news.
Breaking. Current news.
Breaking news.
Okay, so you're originally from Montreal, right?
Yes, sir.
Did you hear this story? There is a new law that is just not a bylaw, but an actual law that's just been passed in Montreal. People will be fined up to $1,000 for bad odor in a public library.
Only in a library.
That's my first question. Why are we restricting it to libraries? Like, you're on to something, right? Let's fucking punish people for hygiene. And of all people do it, Montreal.
Nothing surprises me in Montreal anymore, in Quebec, to be honest. Absolutely nothing surprises me. The ignorance has gone to an all-time high. It is crazy. And I have tons of friends still out there and I hear complaints all day long. It is crazy. Some of the stuff I heard, even last time I was there, I always ask when I go back, I'm like, how are things now? And I was asking about, you know, how, because, you know, it's gotten so bad where if you speak English there, they basically like spitting on your shoes. It's crazy.
Forget it.
Who are you? Get out of here. And there, my friend was telling me about a lady who died because she called 911 but was speaking English and the lady wouldn't talk to her and answer. And I was like, what?
Wow.
How is this even possible?
That's wild.
So, but again, I was like, this is crazy. And then I was like, but still not so shocking for Quebec. Still not so shocking.
I don't know if you're an NBA fan or not, but NBA Commissioner Adam Silver made a comment recently about expansion. And he mentioned Seattle, Las Vegas being strong candidates. But then he also threw out Mexico City, Vancouver, and to many people's surprise, Montreal. And of course, everyone starts, oh, we Montreal needs a team. And I'm like, fuck that. I do not, I am not ready for Montreal to start throwing their language law bullshit at the NBA. We need French speaking players. Everyone has to be from Cameroon. That's it. Like, I'm fuck that. I'm not down.
I can't see that. I can't see that surviving, nor Vancouver. I don't think Vancouver is ready for that either. Mexico City. All. I think Mexico City would probably be the one. Vegas, obviously, that's a no-brainer.
Vegas is money. Seattle's getting a team back.
Yeah.
On that whole thing though about like smelling bad and getting charged, I'm trying to figure out smelling bad according to whom.
Well, because that's
when
it.
I go you to spray, Montreal, everyone reeks of smoke. Cologne.
Yeah, it's mixed, well, but what if you just spray a bad cologne? That's not, you know, what if you use Sex Panther?
They all like it? They all smell like Marlboros to me.
Yeah, I mean, who's really the judge of that? You're going to catch that one asshole that works in the library. It's just going to be throwing out fines because they get commission off the fines or something. Yeah, I don't. That sounds like a very racist law, by the way, too. It sounds like they're really trying to target some groups in that one.
I mean, it's Montreal. So,
like I said, nothing surprises me.
Did you have a story you wanted to throw at Scratch?
Well, we were talking about this one and I wanted to get your take on it. There was a church service attended in Germany. Okay. And all these people showed up for this church service and the entire sermon was done in Chat GPT. Like they put up a screen. They had a minister, you know, show up on the screen and the entire thing was done in Chat GPT. Have we got to the point yet where DJing can be done AI?
It's already not necessarily AI, but it's already been done.
We go back WKRP, like the DJ 5000 or whatever it was, you know, the machine.
Even now, it's like guys are doing sets in wherever they are in the world. Let's say a guy's doing a set in Germany and they'll take that feed and put it in a club in Italy at the same time. So it does happen.
But I mean, not being done by like a live stream to some other club. I mean, literally like this is AI enhanced. They created this entire sermon. Do you think they'll be doing like creating sets AI as well?
Yeah. Coming to Vegas really soon. Guaranteed. Wow. Guaranteed. And people will flock to it because it's easy to do for a club, as long as you have somebody that can just sit behind the scenes and program a night and be like, these songs, put these songs in this order. And you just have, I mean, in reality, when you go to a festival or EDM festival, it's pretty much what it is. A lot of these guys are playing the pre-record mixes and they're just up there twiddling knobs and the light shows are going and all that stuff. So I think it's already out there. And it's been out there for ages, but I guarantee. And I think it's not that, definitely not far away if it's not being done already. And it's fairly easy to do.
Are you telling me that these hot chicks in bikinis that I see standing behind DJ tables, a lot of them aren't really DJing?
Sorry to be the one to break the news to you.
Have you seen
a lot of the big name dudes out there too are doing the same shit. So.
I don't know what kind of movies you're into. Have you seen the movie Pop Star with Andy Samberg?
How old is that?
I feel like I have. 7-8 years.
Yeah, I feel like I have.
It's like a mockumentary.
Yeah. And
it's got a million celebrity cameos in it.
Yeah.
It's this whole thing where Andy Samberg and his two childhood best friends, they're a three-man boy band. And then he eventually spins off and becomes his own pop star. And one of the guys from his old crew becomes his DJ. And then the DJ is like getting pissed at Andy's character. He's like, what do I even do anymore? I push play on my iPod and that's it. Yeah.
I remember that. It's not that far-fetched.
Anyone out there who's never seen that movie, go watch it. You'll laugh your ass off. Okay, you said nothing in Montreal surprises you. What about Brampton? In Brampton, Ontario, there's a story from this past week. Snow began to fall and a vehicle was stopped on Queen Street East in Brampton, Ontario, doing 153 kilometers in a 60 zone. 26-year-old man from Caledon, Ontario, which is a neighboring borough next to Brampton, he told the police he was speeding because he really had to take a poop.
Yeah, I could see that too, but that's scary, man. That's dangerous. And the amount of accidents that happen in Brampton as is.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's scary. That's scary. But, I mean, hey, we've all been there.
This guy got charged with stunt driving, 30-day license suspension, 14-day impoundment. I'm shocked he didn't go to jail. That's,
like, I was going to say, only 30 days? Yeah. You can almost triple the speed limit in 30 days?
Wow. Like, he could have stopped at Tim Hortons and taken a shit.
Yeah, I have to go that bad. I'm hitting the side of the road.
Right. That's nothing, guys. That's nothing. Listen to this. Okay, Morgantown, like West Virginia. All right. Yep. Think about the atmosphere. It's Morgantown, West Virginia, of all places. Okay. Well, I mean, that's alleged. A man has been charged after allegedly trying to kill someone in Morgantown for, you ready for this? Eating all the tacos.
So okay. Eating all the tacos from where?
From home, apparently. Okay. So Dale Martin, 53 years old, became irate because the rest of the family ate all the tacos. He went to the bedroom, grabbed a .22 semi-automatic rifle. The victim ran up the staircase after seeing Martin with the rifle, according to the complaint. The victim stated that Martin fired the gun into the staircase where he had just been and said, "I just shot at the victim. Don't think I won't get the 12 gauge and blow his effing head off."
Okay, well, that's where he went wrong, because if he just stuck to the .22, his lawyer could have said, "Your Honor, it's a .22. The fuck's he going to do? It's a scratch."
You know? Dude, in West Virginia, over some cracker ass tacos, we're talking ground meat, shredded cheese, like the worst. Oh, listen, if there's two things in the world that I know tequila and I know tacos, man.
Are you really surprised by any gun story you hear in the U.S.? Are you really surprised ever?
But dude, over some cracker ass tacos?
Hey. I mean, listen.
Some fucking old El Paso?
We've all been there too, where you come back home late at night, you look in the fridge and you're like, Where the fuck am I? Now, if I had a gun.
I think the guy who's willing to kill for his tacos should be friends with the guy who triples the speed limit to take a shit. Yeah. I feel like those guys could be boys.
I'm not going to lie. I'm intrigued. I would love to try that taco. Just to see what the rage is about. If that shit can make you go off the deep end like that, hey.
That guy's code for murder was a little looser than Dexter's. I'm just saying.
Yeah. And I think guy he shot at would have been running as fast up the stairs either way because he just had tacos. He had
places to go. Clearly, he had too many fucking tacos.
That's crazy. But again, it's the U.S., not shocking. Sorry, people.
Right?
DJ, starting from scratch, you've been awesome with your time tonight. You got anything coming up that you want to plug or promote, tell the people about?
Apparently, I'll never be playing in Quebec or in the U.S. again. Thanks to these
West sports. Virginia and Quebec, you're fucking banned.
I don't know. I always suck at this stuff. Go to RussellPeters.com. Check out where we're going to be. Hit me up on Instagram. That's usually where you'll find out where I'm going to be. And besides that, I don't know. I'll be somewhere. I'll be somewhere.
Tremendous. If you and Russell Peters were at the bar and there's $10,000 on the line for last man standing, who wins?
For drinking?
Yeah.
Oh, me easily. he's a lightweight. He's a lightweight. Okay. He'll tell you that too. He's a lightweight. So I'll gladly.
By the way,
grand, which he doesn't even need. So I can.
I got to mention this as well. This is of interest to both of you. Before we say goodnight, yesterday I was talking to our mutual friend Joey Medina, or as Scratch likes to call him, Medina. I was chatting with him, you know, hey bro, what's going on, what's new? And he tells me he got really fucked up recently and wrote a dark zombie comedy.
I don't doubt it.
And so I said, that sounds fucking fantastic. So he sends me the screenplay and I read it this morning and I thought, this guy's about to win another 100 film festival awards because it's fucking brilliant.
Crazy.
So I think everybody in this call right now should be angling to get a part in that film. It's so good.
Text him.
Yeah. Yeah. Just be like, look, I need to get in this zombie movie.
Yeah, he's going to know. He's going to know we talked about it. So let's time it out. You going to text him tonight and I'll text him tomorrow.
All at the same time.
He's going to like, these motherfuckers.
Zombies invade the podcast. There you go.
That's right. Starting from scratch. We'll post all your socials and everything up on godfathersofpodcasting.com. Thanks for hanging out with us, man.
Thank you guys.
So all right. Love to hear it. It's good that it wasn't a waste of your time.
Never that. Never that. I wouldn't do it if it was, or I would have left a long time. I would have been like, my kids are calling me upstairs. I got to go. So if you have anything else you want to ask, ask now while we got time.
No, it's all good, man. Thank you so much for your time. You've been very, very generous. Much appreciated. Hey guys.
All right. Thanks, brother.
There he goes. DJ starting from scratch. Ted, any last thoughts before we wrap this one up?
No, it's good to be back. It's good to do one of these again, you know. I mean, yeah. What more to say, right?
And you know what? With December coming, I don't know how many of these we're going to do because the Christmas season is kind of fucked up for trying to do episodes. I'm not going to lie. And I'm going away the end of December, right after Christmas. I'm fucking off and going down to visit family in the U.S., which I'm very excited about. Not in West Virginia. Nobody's going to be pulling out 22s if I eat all the food.
The other West Virginia?
What's
Pennsylvania?
That?
Pennsylvania? Other West Virginia? Pennsylvania?
Are you hating on PA? So-called Eagles fan is hating on PA?
Yeah. Just that Quaker area that you go to.
No. Where I went to the last time was definitely right around Amish country, but that's not where all my family is situated. My family's like 45 minutes from Newark, 55 minutes from Philadelphia. You know, we're like, it's a perfect sort of middle ground right where everybody is. So, but speaking of the Eagles,
yeah, what
San
about
Francisco's,
it?
San Francisco's going to put a fucking hurting on your Eagles this weekend. Right.
Just like they did last year.
They're going to put a fucking hurting on the Eagles this year. That's all I'm saying. This weekend.
Uh-huh. Yep. Okay. All right. Well, good luck to you.
I'll bet you a bottle of whiskey.
Okay. But I don't drink whiskey.
Fine. You pay me in whiskey. I pay you in really low-grade tequila because I can't afford the shit
you want to play this game?
Nope. I can't afford the shit you like. $700
a bottle. We'll do it up nice. You can bring over a nice bottle of tequila. Mm-hmm. I've got a bottle of Johnny Blue downstairs in the bar, right? And we'll enjoy some Christmas cheer and laugh about how bad the Eagles beat up on the San Francisco 49ers.
You've got a bottle of Johnny sitting down there just literally fucking collecting dust, doing nothing, just collecting dust.
You should just
be offering that up to your boy anyway. It's just collecting dust.
No, it's in a case.
The case is collecting dust.
It's dusted all the time, bro. None of those bottles get dirty. Some of them don't stick around long enough.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's Ted. I'm Donnie. Go to godfathersofpodcasting.com for all of our links, our socials, and everything else. You'll see everything that we're up to up on there. Thanks so much to DJ Starting From Scratch for hanging out with us tonight. And thanks to all of you for checking this out. Make sure you tell a friend, tell a loved one, hey, tell someone you don't fucking like. If you don't like us, tell someone you don't like and prank them and be like, hey, go listen to this shit. And, you know, you'll get over on them somehow. I don't know. It's Ted. That's Donnie. Episode 159 in the books. We'll see you next time.
Fuck this shit, I'm out. Mm-mm. Fuck this shit, I'm out.
No thanks.
Don't mind me, I'ma just grab my stuff and leave. Excuse me, please. Fuck this shit, I'm out.
Nope.
Fuck this shit, I'm out.
Alright then.
I don't know what the fuck just happened, but I don't really care. I'ma get the fuck up out of
here. Fuck this shit, I'm out.